Well, it's another regular Monday, Johnny, and we're back with Talk About That.
I don't think you sold it the way that I'd like you to sell it. What's the regular, just a regular old Monday, you guys?
Well, you know,
Mondays get a bad rap anyway, and now you've thrown regular on it.
Well, you know, last week we did not put out a regular episode. We put out a throwback episode, and there was some upheaval. Like, people were like, where is our episode?
I saw a couple of tweets that people were upset, and does that make you feel good, or does it make you feel like you spoiled brats out there? We just like to flip our head back, and like a Pez dispenser, content just comes out of our neck hole. I don't appreciate that. We're not your dancing monkeys. Quit it, you know?
Johnny, do you have a neck hole?
I don't. but I had a grandparent. No. I just wanted to start off immediately.
we should just take this first 2 minutes and get rid of it.
No, it's fine. It's fine. They've come to expect nothing less from us.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know.
Well, you know, we are back, and we are remote today, and so Johnny and I are looking at each other on a Zoom call.
We're socially and emotionally distanced.
Yes, I'm distancing in many ways. I'm kind of exhausted, I'm not going to lie, Johnny. Yeah. We did not have a regular episode. My grandfather passed away last Saturday, and he was 91, and I've prepared for a lot of funerals and those things, but of course my dad passed about 3 years ago. And so normally he would have sprung into action, as he was.
Right. He would have been the patriarch that handled everything.
Right.
He was the rock of the family.
Yeah. So we had to spring into action, and my grandmother's 88. And of course the COVID just made this extremely complex, complex week. So my mom and I handled, you know, all the details, you know, in terms of funeral arrangements, things like that. But it was just trying to figure out, like, oh, who can we invite? And of course, my grandfather founded a church that I grew up in, and he had all these, you know, honestly, over the years, he, you know, 60, you know, plus years in ministry, so many people. His church is not large per se, but there are thousands of people out there that were affected by him. And so how are we going to do this? Or are we, of course, you know,
Ryan, you're limited, right, to how many people can be in the room and all this.
Well, it's in Davidson County in Nashville, you know? And so, trying to figure out what the limitations are, though the limitations are different on religious organizations. You just had all this, all these swirling and then questions. And then, you know, are we going to do something for the family afterwards? You know, we have a lot of elderly people.
Right. Usually you get together, have a meal.
You know, I mean, and you know, so it turned out we made our way through it. It was yesterday. But man, this one took it out of me in terms of just, planning, and it was just a lot of daily unanswered questions that we had to kind of wait for and work our way through. But it was a beautiful time. And we ended up having, you know, we had to limit it to less than 50, and they were distanced and they were masked, and the funeral home, that was all their policies. That really actually helped. Eventually we kind of figured out what their policies were, because they're having to abide, you know, by the county policies.
Yeah.
And so checking temperatures, you know, and then,
oh wow, yeah.
Yeah. And they had a little laser gun. They point at your head, you know.
So that's like,
are
why
you erasing my memory right now? Because I've had a lot of that lately.
I would love it. Wouldn't it be great to start clean? Oh my gosh.
Oh man.
I was talking to somebody about that the other day, about how, like, I will have a bad memory. Like, I'll be in the shower or just laying in bed at night, and like, you're not around your phone, and so you just have this quiet time in your head, which we've talked about before. That's when, like, this weird part of your brain now just opens up. And then you'll just have this memory of, like, hey, remember when you walked out in sixth grade out of the bathroom and your fly was down and you didn't notice for an hour, and then girls saw your shirt tails coming through? And you'll just, and I will audibly, like, go, oh, I'll cringe, like, audibly.
Yeah.
So I would love it if somebody would be like, you know what? You don't have to have that anymore, Johnny. That memory's now gone. But I guess they would take the good memories too, so that'd be bad.
I don't know. That sounds like the lyric of a country song. Don't take the good memories.
Oh, it's true. Because if you could have your memory wiped of the... It's like the dance. I'd had to miss the dance.
Yeah. Some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers.
And,
you know, I went skydiving.
Bad memories with the good. Oh, you went Rocky Mountain?
Rocky Mountain climbing. I went...
2.7 seconds on a bull named Fu Manchu.
You know, Johnny, isn't life just like a country song, though? isn't it? No, it's really not. But the country songs do help you reflect on how life could be, and it makes you find the better parts, yeah. I suppose. My wife likes country songs because of their storytelling. You know, they have that. Yeah. But no, you know, I think for me, when I look back, and it's funny because I am in a 12-step recovery program, mm-hmm. called Regeneration, and it's a Christian program, and it's just awesome. There's a lot of us at church, and it kind of, you have that, I had those impressions of what that was. You know, that's only for substance addicts and people who are struggling with those kinds of things. And there's 115 things on the list, from worry to, needing the approval of people, depression, you know, anxiety, a lot of other things in your life, including the substance issues. And, when you really go through it in the beginning, you're like, oh, wow, there's 20 things here that are kind of life controlling problems for me that I've just mm-hmm. learned to manage a little bit. And so it really begins to deal, you know, with you, hey, you know, maybe this is not something that keeps overtaking you and you have to keep pushing back with your own management. Maybe you should find the real issues and your real security in other places. And, you know, not that you ever stop feeling the issues, but that you have better security in the gospel and better tools to say, this doesn't control me in that way. And so, yeah. I'm in the part, and you're my mentor, by the way, Johnny. I don't know if you knew that.
I did know. Yeah. But I've always felt, in a way, John, that I was.
Like you're my mentor.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm in the section, it's like step four right now, where you create a fearless inventory. And it is the most labor intensive part of it. Like it's a lot of work. And yeah. And you do inventory of all the harms to you and all the harms by you. And there's all these questions and all these appendices and things.
And then you got to read it to me.
Right. And you're
one of the people. And then my response is, good luck with all that.
That's right. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah. And I'm like, lose my number, friend.
But it's funny because you talk about those childhood memories, and that is something, even if you're not struggling with them anymore, like when there's a whole section on fears.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to, you know, look, if it's something you really remember, mm-hmm. then write about it. And it's like a real repetitive process on purpose, because you begin to see patterns. I've already had a few patterns really surface that are very interesting, things I hadn't thought of before. But yeah, man, I'm like going down memory lane right now of, oh yeah, I remember when that happened when I was about, I don't know, 12, and I was made fun of, you know, because of this. And wow, I now can look and see when I was 20, how I really was still probably, you know, trying to disprove those things. And
that,
for a lot of people, and again, I'm a real, I feel like most people probably think I'm with it and I manage things well, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So for some, there's a sense of, what are you digging up all that pain for? You're doing fine, you know?
Right.
And getting to the point, you go, yeah, I have. And some of those things, yeah, they don't affect me today in that same way, but they did probably set me into patterns, especially.
Yeah, it's like it's like almost like a template for your brain.
Yeah.
That it's set in motion by trauma. Like, I think that way, because I grew up in a very like legalistic household. Mm-hmm. Like, my mom was a very grace oriented person in the way that she acted towards others. But in the way that she talked and taught, it was very black and white, us versus them. You're with us or against us. If someone had a problem with alcohol, or even if they drank alcohol, that was wrong. That was a bad. So to your point, I have a totally different view about alcohol in moderation in my adult life now. Yeah. And, but I still sometimes will catch myself, I'll see somebody drinking and I'll revert back to that old mindset of like, well, what's this guy's deal? And then forget, like, I don't even feel that way anymore.
Right. It's a reaction.
But it's like that brain template, it takes over, and you're like, then you have to remind yourself, like, what do I care what this person, you know what I'm saying? Like, why do I need to be, that's the thing about that legalism. It's all about being in other people's business.
Right.
And it's addictive. And that's one of the things I think that Twitter gives you, that same buzz. You feel like you're observing an argument from afar. and you can right. be all in their business without it affecting your life in any like meaningful way other than just making you depressed or angry. But I'm saying like, I think there's something about that, that church people got in the 80s and 90s by thinking everyone was a Satanist if they listened to certain music, or everyone was going right. to hell if they watched an R-rated movie, or everyone was falling away if they had a glass of wine with their meal. Like, we needed that little buzz of self-righteousness to get us through. And when you remove that and you just go, oh, that's not a thing that I need anymore, but it still kicks in sometimes. And I'm like, oh, because you still want to kind of believe there's still this need in our broken humanity to believe that we're better off. Like yeah. I'm bad, but I'm not as bad as person. Right. And so anything that we can do to give us a foothold there, be mm-hmm. it whatever activity that we perceive as wrong. And so it is weird though, when you see those things and they kick up from your childhood and you're like, but I don't even think that anymore. Why would that even be a thing? But it does. It comes up.
Well, your emotional self is not always connected to your logical self. And, yeah. and that's not like jargon. That's just truth. That there are things you can, in fact, when you talk about youth or children, you know, we always marvel at watching Sadie, who has an extremely developed vocabulary and honestly, a lot of presence of mind. Like if someone's hurting, you know, someone's in pain, like she's very attuned, very perceptive of things that in a way maybe that sometimes a lot of adults around me don't see and responds
you think,
with
empathy. You think she has like a sixth sense? Like she's got,
I think maybe like she floats things across the room. I'm
that's
like, wow,
interesting. That's not empathy, John. That's telekinesis.
Yeah. I mean, we teleport occasionally anyway, but you know, then at the same time though, she's still 12 and you'll have this other thing. It's like, we always just say, listen, maturity doesn't all come at once. And I think that's true for adults as well. It doesn't come in all categories at once. It's almost like the little audio vertical bar graph thing that looks like on your radio or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, things are jumping at different rates and at different times. And so I think that being aware that I have something emotional, something reactionary in my life that I'm not probably aware of, mm-hmm. That's the beginning of everything for me. In fact, I'm so completely, I guess, aghast is a word that comes to me. It's not a word you use a lot, Johnny. People don't say aghast enough.
You're going, that's like a Dickens.
I'm so aghast.
Give me the biggest goose in the window. It's still Christmas. I haven't missed it. That's what we'll be saying this year. We'll be like, what day is it? It'll be like festive masks on everybody. It's going to be wonderful.
Oh, it's going to be great. But, you know, I'm really surprised at, I think I see it in conservative politics right now. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm sorry. I got to tell everybody, I am a conservative. Like that's what's crazy about that.
That's what makes it harder to watch, because you can't just be like, these jerks. You're like, oh no, this is how I used to identify with 99 out of 100 things, and now it feels like it's kind of been hijacked by, like, I feel like both parties have been hijacked by, you know, weird ideologues, and it's almost like an ideological cult on both sides if you go to the far right and far left. But yeah, when you look at it and you're like, I don't align, like people that are leaving conservative or the Republican Party are saying like, the conservative party left me, I didn't leave it, you know, and I kind of almost understand what they mean in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, there is a change in there's this sense of, I already know what's right completely.
Yeah.
And I'm insulted. And I think, again, it goes back to that. That's saying, I don't have any blind spots. I don't mm-hmm. have any reactionary emotional places that I can't see. And for us at our church, you know, we were certainly there on a spiritual level. I just see now that the greatest gift that the gospel offers you only comes through you being willing to admit that you need it, that there may be something in my life. And I think that goes back to so many people's viewpoint of what salvation is and how it works. Because think of how most of us say it in the South. It's a very past tense thing. It's mm-hmm. I got saved right. when I was 8 or whatever. And I do believe there's that moment of complete spiritual resurrection But there's also throughout scripture, these present and future tense processes of, you know, I am still in the process of being saved, of being rescued. And if you don't believe you have anything to be rescued or healed from, now, if I said it that just explicitly, hey man, do you think you're perfect? Of course not. Everyone, no one's perfect. I mean, there's always a but after that. And I think that that's, again, that you believe that you believe. That's how I was. I believed that I believed that I wasn't perfect and I still needed Jesus. But then I was functionally in so many very black and white concrete places. Like you said, whether it's, you kind of pick whatever your pet sin is for everybody else around you. You know, and man, you grow up and you do it in youth ministry for 2 decades. And it's a real, like, you know, it's easy to point out. And then one day you come to the conclusion or the revelation that you are those kids.
Yeah.
Like I may have more knowledge, more experience. I may have more spiritual wisdom, you know, all those kinds of things, but I am the broken one. And I think that I think it's a dangerous place within the church when the church stops needing Jesus. Because they don't think they're broken. And I don't mean that to sound pseudo-spiritual. I think that's really the case. If I got to talk about my grandfather, and my grandfather so a big part of his thing was he was either born in 1929 or 1930, and his birth certificate was filled out incorrectly. And so he would use whatever year suited his needs throughout his life.
Okay.
And it was very common, and especially around World War II, for young men to try to get, if they wanted to go overseas, they could lie about their age. And the government, I think, was needing soldiers. So I don't think it was nearly as, you know, you're not like you're going to pop it into a computer and search out the database. And
right.
Like, you know, you could just easily say, yeah. So he went, the war had technically ended. He was the youngest of four. He went to Germany at 16.
Oh my gosh.
And it was directly after the war had ended. But people don't really realize, like, I mean, Europe was completely destroyed.
Yeah, it's a mess. Yeah.
A decade, you know, and especially Germany. Germany did not really recover.
And not a very pro-American sentiment if you're there either, even if the war's over.
Right. Well, and again,
dangerous place to be still.
And now it's the beginning of the Cold War.
Yeah.
The very ending of the war with the Nazis began the war with the communists because we closed in on Germany, us coming from the West, them coming from the East, and literally it converged into Berlin, and that's where East and West Berlin were divided. And who is now going to control and rebuild Europe is the real question. Is it going to be Western, you know, democratic states, where democracy is you know, a thing, or is it going to be communism and Marxism? And so it's a, you know, the Cold War is not, it didn't happen in a vacuum. It happened for a reason. It's because suddenly everything could be redivided. And so my pawpaw found himself in Germany at that time. And there was a thing there, people don't know their history, called the Berlin Airlift. I mean, you had no fly zones and different things happening where, you know, it's a real tense area. It's a real tense time in history. And Pawpaw would tell me, and he would tear up and cry about it. He would say, and I remember he told me a couple of years back, he came in on a ship with a bunch of other soldiers, and they had all of their rations on board. And they had oranges, you know, and they were coming into, I guess, whatever river was bringing them in there to Berlin. And he took an orange and he had eaten it, and he threw the peel off onto the land there.
Yeah.
And there were these starving German people that, like, 10 people ran to that orange peel, like that he had dropped a steak, and started fighting each other over it. And some guy, you know, beat a bunch of other people down and grabbed it and ran over to his little kid and stuffed it in his mouth, basically, because they were starving.
Oh my gosh.
It so profoundly affected my grandfather. He would say this in sermons all the time. He would say, people were so desperate, you could give them a Snickers bar and hand them a gun and say, I'll give you the Snickers if you go kill that person. And they would do anything, you know. It was this horrible, just, you know, time in humanity. But Pawpaw then, he became an alcoholic. He became addicted to cigarettes. He became a compulsive gambler. During, I mean, he was only 16. And yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah, it's like you're forced to grow up, so you develop all these grown-up habits too.
Oh, yeah. And he's no doubt. And you know, he didn't smile a lot in any of the pictures, but I started thinking he's probably trying to look older. You know?
Yeah, that's like, true. Yeah.
You know,
trying to pass.
So he got, you know, he was not dishonorably discharged or anything, but he was taken by the MPs and had to basically detox him, and they put him in this tiny cell, and he tells that story. And he came home, you know, from Europe, and that's where he had this like radical salvation experience. You know, that was just one of those things where he never drank or smoked again.
Right. Kind of, yeah. You hear about that stuff. I think I've heard you tell me that before, that he just prayed and then like he just never craved alcohol ever again and never. Yeah.
And it was a very, very Pentecostal thing that he went down to an altar and, and he, that was one of his expressions was, is, you know, the reason I do this is because they still walk the aisles. Like I walked an aisle one time, you know, and so, you know, that's so embedded into, I think, that evangelical, especially Pentecostal side of the culture. And he just was very emotional, but I was telling the people like, you know, if you read the Apostle Paul, and this goes back to the previous conversation, he never stopped talking about how bad he was. Mm-hmm. He still knew that he was being rescued from that. Like it wasn't just a past thing. It was a, I'm writing to you as the chief of sinners. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't mean he also would write to you as one who was redeemed in Christ. So that dual, the tension of the two present tense titles he was giving himself is a part of it. Like it was effective to point out to everyone, I'm the guy that was trying to kill Christians. And now I am, so the chief of sinners has become the chief statesman for the faith. And that's to reveal to you the grace of Christ. But if I ever stop talking about being the chief of sinners, then what do I become? You know, now you're not going to see Jesus anymore. You're not going to see how miraculous this process is. And my grandfather did the same thing. He never stopped talking about his addiction, you know, and his struggles. And so how painful that can be in some ways, but it's also what makes us believers. We have this peace in the middle of, you know, I'm going to tell you shameful things without shame dominating my life because I've been freed in Christ. And I just see a movement among a lot of churches and I've been there myself where there's not as a practice an admittance of weakness. There's not an admittance of, you know, of my need, again, of John 15, that I don't bear any fruit if I'm not abiding in this place in Christ. But to abide in Christ is to recognize and acknowledge my complete inability. In fact, one of the first steps is, as we say, that I am powerless to manage my patterns of sin and addiction. I'm powerless. And it's a real shot to your confidence, or a real shot to your pride, rather. Like it helps your confidence in the right way. Like, do you really believe that you're powerless to manage properly any sort of freedom from the things in your life? And for most of my life, because I was a preacher, I'd be like, what sin? Well, yeah, sure. Everyone's got pride and gets mad at their wife and watches the wrong thing sometimes on TV and always repent. And everyone worries, right? It's irresponsible almost not to worry. And I'm beginning to realize like, maybe everyone does. But I don't think that's really the life that Christ actually has for me. Mm-hmm. He actually said 600 times in Scripture not to worry or be anxious. It's throughout the Bible. Like I've learned that now. 600 and something times. Don't worry. Don't fear. Don't be anxious. I mean, we just wear it like it's normal life.
Yeah.
And so I'm in a process. Yeah. What you always say, when you see people who don't seem worried, you're almost offended at them.
You know? It's like, you're just not paying attention. Even like the phrase woke, like being woke is like you've been asleep to all these problems in the world. And now you see why I'm so upset. And now you're woke like me. You've been awakened. So it's like it has become definitely a badge of honor to be consistently outraged rather than have a sense of peace. And I understand there's a time for outrage. But you know what I mean? Like just constantly checking social media to see what the new thing to be upset is about and more upset than the other person to show how much more woke you are than them. That's become a badge of honor. Show how much harder you're working. That's a big thing we've talked about before. You know, like even the 40-hour work week is like, it's an invention.
Right.
You know, it's an invention that came from the Industrial Revolution. I mean, it's not, we just have determined that hardworking people means 40 hours a week or more, and right. usually more. And, but that's not necessarily like something that God put in, you know, that God put into order. Like, it's going to be, it's got to be 8-hour days away from your family, or you didn't really work.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, the idea of Sabbath or cultural siesta, those mm-hmm. kinds of things, you know, to the modern Western thought was you're just not being productive, or you're yeah. not holding it all together like you could. It's a very interesting, in fact, I thought the other day, I think that we have a counter wokeness in conservatism. It's like conserva woke now.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah. And that what that means, I am now woke to calling out your wokeness.
Yeah.
Like there's that counter reactionary.
Yeah.
You know, I remember studying political science in college that, you know, we talked the other day about socialism and fascism being the far left and the far right, and understanding where the extremes take you throughout history, you know. So, yeah, look, I don't want Stalin or Hitler, but they weren't on the same side. One was extremely liberal. One was extremely conservative. I'm not looking for either one of those. They're both bad. I'm anti both of those things.
Yeah.
So I think that the flip side is the other two words is understand the difference between revolutionaries and reactionaries, because those are also, revolutionary is a far left thing, and reactionaryism is actually a thing. It's a hallmark of conservatism. Because you got to think about it, just the very word conservatism is I'm trying to keep things as much as possible from changing, as
yeah,
opposed
status
to
quo. Status quo right. becomes like an idol to conservatives.
Right. And revolutionary thought is we need to change everything all of the time.
Right.
But that reactionary thought process is just another way of your wokeness. In fact, I've talked to many who they think, those of us who are, again, I don't call myself woke or whatever. I don't even, you know, I think labels are part of the problem a lot of the time, though. But I am opening my mind. Again, I just feel like I have a lot of places to grow that I don't feel like
I'm, you can't be afraid of being called a name and let that inhibit your growth. Be like, all right, well, I'm right. not going to learn about racial indignities done in the past because I'll be lumped in with these other people who are called right. woke. It's like, just grow and learn about yourself and learn yeah. about the good and the bad of our history, and don't let people call you names and let that inhibit you. You know, that's right. just, that's part of it.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's the tribalism of it all. Yes, I'm not afraid of that, I guess, as much. But I just think reactionaryism is just another form of that. It's the exact yeah. same thing. Is now people are upset. Well, you got, this is one of the things you see. I watched the other day, a lot of Christians out there who've never cared about this before are now, and there's a sense of shaming people for caring now.
Right. Yeah.
Because you didn't before. And you're, again, to me, it's a gospel issue. Like, okay, guys, if we weren't right in this before, is the answer to yeah, now yeah. say we should remain not correct because we're like, because people, again, conservatism says you're undoing good foundations. You're undoing something that was right. We've been okay. We've been okay. We've been okay. Don't change. Don't change. Yeah. Don't change.
And when you try to say, no, I can show to you that we weren't. And right. then it's like, you're shaming the nation. You're spitting on the founding fathers by just saying, hey, we used to have separate drinking fountains. Can we talk about that? And
right.
can we talk about the fact that it was like, you know, a few decades ago?
Right.
And like, yeah, no, how dare you, you know, even when somebody says, and again, I'm not trying to yep. be political, but like when even somebody says make America great again, you're implying that America was great, and you go to somebody and say, when was America great? America's never been great for everybody. There's right. always been somebody under the foot. And so when you go, okay, well, so you have to look at that and be honest with yourself about it. And yeah. It's just, again, I love America, but it's one of the reasons I don't like that slogan, because it's like, it's a very condescending to a lot of people groups slogan.
Right. I think that the founding fathers would agree. Again, I have a guy who reads a lot of books about and by the founding fathers. I can tell you that they did not begin with the premise that just because we were who we uh-huh. were great. There was a sense of stewardship.
Yeah. Greatness is to be achieved. Greatness is to be fought for yeah. and daily earned.
Yeah. It is a you got to keep moving.
Yeah, and it forward. Can go away. It can go away if you don't. If you lose if you lose your way.
Well, again, George Washington's farewell address. He was warning against that. He was warning. He was warning against political parties. Number one, he hated them, and he was warning against entangling alliances, which is foreign things that got us into other world wars and those kinds. Like he was saying, this is a great place, and I believe that it is, and he believed that it was. Now you're going to have to keep. You're going to have to stick to the things.
Be vigilant.
That we're starting, and you have to make adjustments. Go.
I don't know, man. Well, to your point earlier about pastors not wanting to admit fault or like to own things, or like we've lost the idea of just repentance or saying like I have this flaw and I want to, like I think that's part of, you know, mega church pastors have become brands. Like we all have a brand now. Like I have to, even when I talk with my agent or when I talk to somebody about anything, it's like how many followers, how many, when you go to get a book published, it's, and here we are, we're basically nobodies, but it's like everybody thinks to themselves as far as like, what is this doing for my brand? How much more so if you're a megachurch pastor, you got 3,000-4,000 people in your flock or whatever you want to call it. Now to go to them and say to them this thing of like, hey, I'm just like you and I struggle with X, Y, Z. You're seeing more of it now, maybe in a surface level, but that's a revolutionary act to come out as like a human being and not this, because they're afraid if they admit weakness, they lose the trust of these people when probably the opposite is true. Like you said, if you can say to somebody like Paul did, like, look, this is all the stuff that I have churning in the background. I want to do the right thing, and I can't get it right because people want to. That's the thing we grew up under is, here's 10 steps to a great life. If you do these 5 things like me, you can be joyful and have, God's going to give you all the money and he's going to give you all the success. And it doesn't ring true. And then they find out that you're also a sinful person, and then everything comes unglued. And then the people who believed and came to faith under your ministry, they feel like that linchpin was you and not even Christ anymore. So they're like, well, gosh, if Pastor so-and-so can't even pull it together and that was all a lie, then maybe God is a lie. So that's the fear. And so we're afraid to be vulnerable. Even when you write, like people talk about, you talk about Sadie and her sensitivity. Like there was a comedian that talked about that, about a very successful guy. And he was saying that does it bother you when people write you angry comments or hurtful comments in YouTube on your videos? And he was like, it hurts every time. But that part of my mind that is sensitive enough to write jokes and see the world with like a third eye, in essence, from a different perspective, that's the same. Like if you take one away, you would lose the other. You can't just be like, no, I don't care what people think. But also I have this extra sensitive mind that lets me see something that you couldn't see.
Right.
So you can't have one without the other. And so I think pastors who are trying to be superhuman are just on a collision course.
It's not even it's everything that can be shaken will be. That is a scriptural principle. I don't think it's a promise. I think sowing and reaping are principles more than there are promises. Because yes, sometimes a young person dies and there's not a real cause that we can see, cause and effect. Something we've learned in those Bible Project videos is that, like, especially Proverbs and Ecclesiastes and those things, like, you know, train up a child in the way he shall go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. It's not a promise as much as it's a principle. Mm-hmm. In general, good things, when you sow good things, you reap good things. But there's always something, you know, that can go awry in that, and that's part of the brokenness of the world and the mystery, the balance of the two. So if you're banking on that kind of thought process of, well, hey, I think there are corrupt politicians and there are pastors who are caught in a lot of immorality that don't ever get caught and they remain successful. That's Psalm 37 talks about that. Do not fret over the evildoer who prospers in his way. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that happens. I mean, the psalmist is acknowledging that
the exception that proves the rule kind of a thing.
Yeah. There's this imbalance to what you're expecting, and everyone thinks that good produces good and bad produces bad. And that's why we all want to think of ourselves as good people, because then we think, you know, they're bad. And I've had a lot of Christians say that. I just think people are actually pretty good. What they mean is comparatively, they're good. Good compared to what is really what that means. And the real gospel says, you know, hey, you can acknowledge your complete and utter death. I mean, it's death is how distant you are. That's the beauty of it, is that you get brought to life by another and you don't have anything to boast about in it. And that's not just the time you got saved. Like that is the life you're supposed to live in. Is this, imagine how grateful you are when you realize that your breath is sustained by Jesus, both physically and spiritually. That there's this active, you know, Chesterton talked about that a lot, as did C.S. Lewis. There's this active intervention of Jesus who, it says in Acts, holds all things together. Actually, that may be, sorry, Colossians. But who says in Acts, says in him we live and move and have our being. Like there's this more active present tense thing, because when the gospel is a past tense thing and now it's up to you and you're pretty good compared to everybody else. And yeah. I think you're right about pastors. And I can say that because, you know, I am one. You know, we don't mean to, but your foundation will be shaken. Whether or not you ever have a moral failure or not, what you will have is shallow Christians, because, mm-hmm. and they may not, if your call is to make fully devoted disciples, all of us for one another, if we bake anything else into the foundation other than the goodness of Jesus, you know, expressed in the grace found at the cross, then leads to this radical transformation of life that is beyond what we can do for ourselves with a bunch of just, look, I am in a program, but the program is leading me. In fact, my region leader said it great this week, because one of the guys was talking about like, man, I feel like I'm just needing to write all the bad stuff I've ever done. Like I'm trying to fix myself. And this guy said, it was so great. He said, listen, all this is a tool for you to realize what else you need to keep bringing to Jesus and invite him into. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. And so is the Enneagram. And so is whatever else you do in your life. It's not doing anything. You're not doing anything. You can't. What you're doing is you're becoming more honest about, like Paul was. He had to become honest about, wow, within me as a Pharisee, he was literally a Pharisee, not just metaphorically. Within me as a Pharisee is this desire to do good that I can't achieve. Romans 7, I can't get there. Therefore, this is what I must change about the way that I see. And if you are reactionary, meaning you're only reacting, you're always staying put, and when someone else enacts something upon what you think should be status quo, and that's when you take action, mm-hmm. as opposed to being proactive.
Because you feel like a safety net's been taken away in some way too. You feel like, well, this has been the same for so long, so I want a good reason why you're changing this.
Yeah.
And you feel like it's injustice almost.
Exactly right. And there's this thought process that you think that if you just hold out, it'll all be okay. And I'm mm-hmm. telling you, it won't. I mean, let's not forget throughout our history, you know, conservatives and liberals, both in politicians, in politics, have fallen, have made mistakes, have hurt the country. Like they're not meant to be saving devices. They're meant to be imperfect servants of the people in an imperfect system that we're trying to perfect. I mean, you know, in order to form a more perfect union, right? Like the idea is
that's
it's
good.
Not perfect.
You should write that down. I don't know where you heard that, but that's really good.
But the idea is we are doing something in order to make this better. Meaning we have to acknowledge that it's not perfect. You can't create a more perfect union if you already think it's perfect. Like that there's not, it's not, and we're now quoting founding fathers who we're not disrespecting. We're honoring what they already knew to be true. It is dangerous to believe that all change within a political system or within the gospel even is negative. It's actually meant to be positive. You don't have to agree with all the changes, but if you literally, again, if you're counter woke to the point that anybody who says something that disrupts the status quo is to be canceled and dismissed.
Right.
Then you are literally stopping democracy. In fact, that's what George W. Bush said at John Lewis's funeral. His speech was really great. Clinton and Bush and Obama all spoke. Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful, you know, expression of, you know, two liberals, one conservative, and they all honored the guy and honored his work. And Bush said, I didn't agree. I mean, he actually agreed with a lot, and he had gone to events and stuff with him where him and Obama were there together, especially post-presidency. But he said, this is what it's supposed to be about, is that, you know, we're moving forward and making things better in this imperfect place because we all love this country and we think it is a good and noble country. But in order to make it more, you know, we have to keep looking at these things, and that's supposed to be the democratic process. It's not supposed to be that when somebody is different than you, you just literally go into your own little tribe and refuse to hear anything they say because it must be, I mean, I'm telling you, man, I just got friends right now. You say the word liberal, they're subhuman to you now.
Mm-hmm.
It's now, we literally dehumanize somebody. They're not worth listening to. They could not say one thing worthwhile. When liberals like FDR were some of the greatest countries leaders in our nation's history, that you may not agree with all of their policies, but to dishonor them and their humanity or their desire to help. And yes, they're always, again, I hate all the disclaimers. Yes, there's a radical out there that is dangerous to our country. And that radical may be liberal and that radical may be conservative because humans are. But I'm telling you, what's more dangerous is people in the middle who lean to right or left, dehumanizing the other side.
Yeah.
And here's what I know. I am on the right more than I am on the left. And I can't reach over to the left and cause them to stop doing that because that's the first thing. Well, they're doing it too. Okay. What I can do, what I think the gospel calls me to do in my life is to say, listen, what I'm not going to do is live my life being completely reactionary. In fact, you'll love this, Johnny. You know, even in all of our families have difference of opinions right now on these things because mm-hmm. it's so supercharged. And so it was great. I had a talk with a lot. I'm not trying to be in control, but we had a small gathering of just my immediate family. And for those I'm close to, I said, hey, guys, I'm asking in my house this week that we just come together, remember all the reasons we love each other, and actually remember all the reasons we like each other, even though we have some different viewpoints on things. Because I don't agree with anybody, I think, in my family 100% on anything. I have my own viewpoints on that. And everybody, it was crazy because I think with the loss of my grandfather, everybody really positively responded to that.
That's good.
Because I didn't be like, now y'all get in here and shut up. It wasn't like that. It was like, I'm asking, y'all know we like each other, right? Like, y'all know we love each other. We've actually been a good team this week working on trying to help serve the family and honor my grandfather.
Right, right.
And let's just come together and enjoy each other. And, you know, one of my family members said, amen. Like, it was a real, you know, it was a real call to peace. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because we don't agree. It's because disagreement with vitriol does not lead to the things that make our nation great.
Yeah.
The nation is great because of this tension.
Right. Lively debate that's not ad hominem, that's not taking pot shots. That's you can disagree in a civil way and listen to the other person's point of view. And it's not going to hurt you. I don't know. I think that's important. And also, it does, it's an interesting segue because, you know, my 25-year wedding anniversary is Wednesday.
Oh, my
goodness. Speaking of civil disagreements. Oh, my gosh. 25 years of them. No, I'm just kidding.
Man, congratulations.
I've been pretty lucky. Yeah, so that's another reason we've been kind of distancing is because I went out of town last weekend. I did a couple of comedy shows. So you and I were kind of like playing on the safe side. So we didn't meet up this past week, like we normally do for lunch. And then you did the funeral. You were like, maybe we should just kind of do a remote version of this.
Because we did the best we could. And so did you at your shows.
Yeah,
but
I wore masks all the whole time until I was on stage pretty much. And then, you know, people were, but it is what it is. And it's, it's interesting times though, because I was kind of worried. I didn't promote it at all. It was at a comedy club with another comedian who's a bigger name. And I was just like, he didn't promote it. I didn't promote it, but these shows were already kind of sold out. Well, not sold out, but you know how it is. Sold out at 50% capacity.
Right.
Everybody's like 6 foot tables from each other or whatever, but they were great. And it was fun to hear people laugh again. But yeah, I knew right away when I come back, I'm going to have to, you know, isolate for a few days until I know that I'm not symptomatic or whatever, or it's been enough time to where even if I was symptomatic, I'm not going to harm anybody that I know and care about. So it is a weird time, but yeah, now we're getting ready to go. We're going to go get a cabin in the mountains. It wasn't really our 25 year. We were planning on maybe a Europe trip, but we're not allowed in Europe. I don't know if you know this.
Yeah.
We're literally the ugly Americans right now. We're not allowed. We're not allowed in other countries.
We're not a big fan. Yeah. We're not allowed in Canada right now.
Isn't that funny? But anyway, so we're going to do the quick trip to the mountains and get a cabin and go hiking and do our thing up there and wear masks. And I don't know what we'll do. Get our hiking shoes on. So that'll be fun.
You just laid out when my wife listens to this, the like nightmare scenario for her. She's not into the going out and hiking. She'd probably go to a cabin, but she doesn't even like Gatlinburg because her whole life living in East Tennessee.
That's your de facto like, well, we'll go on a trip, but it's going to be here and get your airbrush t-shirt and your taffy, your saltwater taffy homemade. But yeah, so I've grown since I moved to Middle Tennessee and so flat here, I miss it now more. So I'm like, I go for it. Like when you're a kid, you go for the water park and the Dollywood and the whatever. And then as you get older, you're like, I'm tired of this. But then now I go back because I miss the mountains and the trees and the.
I like going in. Not getting off the traditional Gatlinburg exit where you sit for 4 hours, but we go down and we go through, you probably go through Townsend, but, what's that other side? If you go past Gatlinburg, almost like through North Carolina there.
Yeah. Like Newport area. I know what you're talking about.
You go past Kodak and all those. And we came in from volleyball tournaments, that side. It was a great drive. Beautiful. Yeah. And you come in the backside of Gatlinburg there. And kind of skip all of the,
Yeah, I mean, there's good and bad about it as far as like, like I said, it wouldn't have been our number one choice, but it'll be fun. And we'll, by the time this goes out, we could both have been mauled by a bear. That's the great thing about like we're recording this on a Saturday. We leave on Sunday. So this comes out on Monday. We could be in the paper already.
Wow.
So if that's what happens, just so you know, I really love my wife and I'm very grateful for 25 happy years of marriage. And I didn't see the bear. I didn't know. I did not
We're
even
just
know.
Assuming you did not outrun and leave your wife behind.
You don't know. I was just out on, I was out at a picnic table having a peanut butter and honey sandwich. You know, what do you think's going to happen? You didn't know.
Well, congratulations, man. And then we were talking, you're always 5 years ahead of me, which in life.
In general,
as you said, that's going to be great until
I die for 5 years.
That extra 5 years. And then I don't know. If you die, that mean automatically I die 5 years later? I don't know, Johnny.
We've been tied together for,
a long time.
Could be.
Because it's my 20th, and we were looking at Europe or something too. It's less likely. We have a 12-year-old. Less likely to be gone for that long. But
yeah, because you got to do at least 10 days or whatever you're going to Europe.
I wanted 20 when I wanted at this point. I wanted every 5 years to have that many days.
Oh, so right. But 20 day trip right now, and just not probably feasible. No. But you're going to do it because that's what you are. You got to treat yourself, John.
We're going to do something, but it's not going to be 20 days, and it may just be heck. I mean, I told her I was like, we'll. Yeah, I went on a work trip with her to South Bend, Indiana in the snow a couple of years back. You know, she was working, I was writing, and then we'd go out at night to restaurants. We had a great time. You know, it's like at this point, I would just take a road trip with some 90s music. If we could find a place to eat and hang out and have a few days together. I mean, we'll see. But that's coming up for us.
South Bend, beautiful vacation destination.
You know, you and I almost shared an anniversary.
Yeah.
That. Originally, we planned our wedding for, yours is August the 6th?
August 5th.
5th, sorry. We originally planned our wedding for August the 5th, and then Laura had her brain aneurysm when we were engaged, and we had to push it back to September 30th. That was one of the things. Some of her hair had fallen out from the radiation and stuff. So, yeah, you and I would have shared literally 5 years apart the same anniversary. So, you think we'd have anniversary tripped together? I don't think I'm...
I think if I was going to take a trip, I could see taking a trip with you and Laura. It would be, we probably have different travel. Like, that's the thing. When you take a trip with another couple, you learn your little travel picadillos.
Uh-huh.
Idiosyncrasies come up.
Uh-huh.
Like, and
you're going hiking already. I can tell you right now.
Well, I'm a little bit more active than I ever have been in my life, though. So, we're already looking at, how are we going to stay on track fitness-wise while we're away, which that would never have been in the that would never have been in the conversation before. It would have been like, what restaurants, what things are there to do? Now we're like looking at hiking trail maps and we're seeing if there's going to be a gym open nearby, whatever, we can wear a mask in and still get our, because we lift every other day, We're getting swole, John.
Dude. Yeah, man. That's, yeah.
But yeah, we're definitely like sleep in people. So if you go on a trip, let's say you're on a cruise with somebody and they're like the people who get up at 7 to do the the activity of the day. We've got it. We're embarking here. And then you're like, we don't get up to 11. It's vacation. And then you get irritated at that person.
Yeah.
Like that would be, that's the thing about doing the vacation with another couple. We've done
it. You just got to know.
Yeah. You got to know ahead of time, like, hey, this is our trip with us and it's our trip with you, but more so it's our trip with each other just as a couple. You happen to be along. You guys have your fun. We're going to have our fun. And then we'll get together and have dinner at night.
Yeah.
But maybe as you get older, it's less important and you just go, let's do everything together because we're, you know, we've had all those trips. Maybe it's.
Yeah, we travel with our friends, you know, the Stewarts, because our daughters are best friends, and we did a cruise. And yeah, I mean, we did most things together, but then we were okay. Like, they got off the boat one day with their family, and we didn't. We'd already been.
They came back with, like, sleeve tattoos, and you're like, well, that's one way to go.
Oh, yeah, that would have, you know.
Interesting.
You just kind of got to, you know, be okay with it. And you know, we're more, like, right now, this funeral and everything, yeah, what progress we had made. Like, I was eating cake for breakfast today. Like, I was there. Oh, I was beautiful. Like, oh, man, this is left over from yesterday. I'm just going to go ahead and start eating this straight off the plate with a fork. Like, I didn't even cut a slice. I just started eating into the side of the cake, you know.
Well, then you're like, well, once you start that.
Yeah. So
it's all misshapen.
I mean, I am still running, but it's hard because I'm carrying all this extra weight, you know. But,
John, you're not carrying it. You look great, John.
Cake breaks every 2 miles, you know.
That's a rule. You carry one of those little camelback things, but it's just cake. It's like icing coming in the tube.
You get out of breath trying to suck icing.
You really do. That's what.
But that little energy rush you get from the sugar is good. You know, and you crash at about 5 miles, but no. So, well, man, that'll be fun. I'm glad for you guys. And appreciate all you guys who are listening and how much fun.
You've been given energy from what we've been putting in your
It's like eating cake for breakfast. That's what Talk About That is all about. It's like filling your life with just sugary carbs.
Yeah, that does you no nutritional good, but somehow you keep coming back, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate it. And hey, yo, go check out our Patreon page, and we are very grateful to our patrons who support us every month.
I thought of something new. We can send our patrons, John.
Okay.
The because somebody asked about it, and we actually sent it to one person who is a patron, I believe, but, you know, we talked before about we were in a Christian band together, a Christian rock band for about 7 years. And we have those files in a Dropbox link.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to send that to the patrons we have, and anybody that signs up today or later, we'll send it through the end of the week. We'll start sending that link out so that they can get, if you talk about, '90s, early 2000s Christian rock, dude, it'll take you back when you hear this. It's our EP. Scarlet Thread.
You know, what's crazy is in our program right now, I actually have one of the songs loaded. I didn't even know you were going to say that.
Oh, well.
I could give you.
No, don't give them a tease. They don't need that. Don't tease, because they could be like excited, and then you're like, they're like, oh, that's.
You don't want them to have like a 10-second preview.
Lower their expectations. I want them to ponder what it could be, and then they're, you know. Plus, you're giving away free. I don't like that. You should be a patron if you want anything from us.
I'm just going to give him 10 seconds.
No, it's too much.
Okay. Just Johnny says no, guys. Johnny plays hardball with our patrons.
COVID has changed me, y'all. This whole thing, not working, I can't do it. Please, I'm a hard man now.
Oh, man. Well, we will. We'll send you Scarlet Thread, the EP, digitized files for your listening pleasure.
Because if we send them, I have a sleeve of those CDs, but nobody plays CDs anymore. So there's not much point. So we'll send you the Dropbox link. You can have the files.
They sent me audiobook CDs this week from a publisher for a book that we released recently. Isn't that crazy? I was like, I'm not sure.
There's like six of them.
Yeah. It's
remember Laserdiscs? Do you ever have a Laserdisc? You have to turn it over.
We had them in school.
Big, like a record. Yeah.
Yeah. We had them in school.
You get halfway through the movie, be like, turn over. What? Yep. It's like a dinner plate. So strange.
It was huge. Yeah. It was awesome. So, well, guys, we appreciate you listening. Check out Johnny's socials. You can check out my socials. And, you know, maybe next time I'll talk about some of my social media, limitations right now in my life and what they're doing for me health-wise. But I still am on there. I love you. Follow me. And
you think you're better.
Johnny has no limitations. He just lives on every day.
I do. Oh, I'm so mad all the time now. It's wonderful.
But we hope that you're not mad from listening to our episode today, because we just love sharing the time with you and all learning, growing, having fun together. So we'll see you next time, Lauren.
Talk about that.
The love of God is immeasurable. It's unchanging. It's indescribable. Because God loves you so much, you can sleep through the night in peace. With Abide Bible Sleep Meditation, you can fall asleep fast with relaxing sleep stories based on Scripture. To start listening now, go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Bible Sleep Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.